Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach, pulling back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposing the truth about money. I hope this finds you well on this end of the quarter recording, the end of the quarter that has been very, very difficult. It's been the roughest quarter we've had in the last four or so years. I'm going to do a market update and just touch base on a couple other items. The market update is certainly depressing at this point, other than the fact that those of us that practice an academic approach to investing can find light in that we know that all the news and all the noise, according to the academic elites in finance, the Falmas, the Frenches, the Markowitz, that the news is in essence noise that contributes to a lot of trading. We know that at the end of a year, we're all in the same market environment, and that one is only going to get a market return minus what it costs to invest. And unfortunately, when it's times like these that the market has volatility, that it is easy for people to search out solutions when often they should not do anything but rebalance their portfolios, because there's more value now than there was before. Their account values may be down, but if you're rebalancing religiously in a global, broad-based portfolio that captures all the different asset classes, then what ends up happening is you have more value in your account, because now's the time that you're purchasing things at a discount. Now, the market update is very frustrating. I'm looking at the last market update I did in my right in front of me here on paper. And wow, what a difference in just a couple weeks. The last market update I did was on September 8th. This is the 30th, or as of close, the 29th of September, so the day before the quarter ends. And there's nothing promising on this whole sheet. I mean, it's all in the negative. Now, none of us like to see our account balances go down, but for those of us that practice the academic truths and the three primary rules of investing, own equities, diversify across the entire marketplace, and rebalance on a regular basis, and realize this too shall pass, this is simply a blip in the road when we look at one's overall investment lifetime. You see, your assets need to last until you check out, not to when you just retire. Some people might say, well, Paul, geez, I'm going to retire in 5 years. I need to go to ultra-conservative. Well, when you plan on checking out, well, not for another 25 or 30 years. Well, your timeline is 25 or 30 years, not five. So this too shall pass. But I'll tell you, when the market's down, it feels like it's never going to end. I remember 08, 09, and then previous years. It just feels like it's not going to turn. And, you know, if you ask most people in the last decade what is their portfolios done, most say lackluster. But when you look at what the market's done, for those of us that are really getting true market returns in the last 10 years in a globally broad-based portfolio that's 50% equities, stocks, and 50% fixed, like cash or short-term T-bills, etc., we've seen 7 out of 10 years be up and 3 out of 10 be down. We never know which is going to be up or down in a year, that is, until hindsight avails us that opportunity to look and say, wow, oh, we did or we didn't. But what you need to understand as a listener is that there is no magic bullet. There is nothing to run to or to run from. But in reality, we need to rebalance, understand that you own all the areas of the marketplace, and there are rare times like the current economic state where everything's down across the board. In fact, when we look at the U.S., whether it be the Russell 2500, which measures small, or the Russell 2000, which measures small to micro, or the Russell 1000, which is large company value type, or the Russell 2000, which is small company value type companies, or the S&P 500, which is widely regarded as the best single gauge for the U.S. equity markets because it represents 500 predominantly large U.S. companies. Across the board, we're negative 7.5 on the low to 11 on the high in some of these asset classes. So right now, U.S. is taking a hit. But for those people that aren't selling out, they're not realizing the loss. It's paper right now. And let me illustrate this. It's really important you understand this. Now, I can't speak for the vast majority of investors, but I can speak to those that pursue an academic approach. That would be us. That I make a statement every so often that confuses people when I say, well, your account balance is down, but the underlying account value is up. Now, wait a minute, Paul, that sounds conflictual. That sounds like silly math to me. Well, no, not if you really analyze it. Let's take a look at it. Let's say, for example, that you have 100 shares in a portfolio. Let's just assume that it's spread across all the different areas of the marketplace. So you have 100 shares in that portfolio. And let's say that the share price went from $10 to $9. Well, it's down. It's down. So we see that the account balance is down. You still have the same amount of shares. You still have 100 shares. They're just not worth $10. They're worth $9. But for those of us that practice religious target allocations and specific allocations of different areas of our portfolios, they never change based on the social, political, economic climate, because there's no science out there that's empirical, that's proven, that would lead us to make changes. Rather, what we should do is take some cash off the table that's part of a well-diversified portfolio and buy up these areas that are down. So now what we have is not 100 shares at $10, but the market went down, so that's 100 shares at $9. But more importantly, as we've rebalancing, what we end up having is 108 shares. So the account value's down, but the value of the account's gone up because of applying the rigid academic truths of investing, which is own the entire marketplace, that is diversification, own equities as well as stocks and bonds, okay, that would be equities, stocks and bonds, have fixed areas that are high quality and low maturity, that is short-term maturity time frames, and what you'll have is a well-diversified portfolio that will withstand the volatility. There is nothing to fix, ladies and gentlemen. And a lot of people run out and just watch the news or pick up the paper. And I don't care what newspaper you pick up or what magazine you pick up. If you really were studious and read the whole thing, you would find that there's point counterpoint in every one. They really don't answer questions. They ask a lot of questions. And they make a lot of, predictions that have no fallback. They have no, there's no recourse for a bad prediction. Well, in our magazine back in a previous issue, we said that those funds may not do well. Well, in the same magazine, we said there's a potential for them to do well. So we call that investainment. It's entertainment. All the stuff you see on the news, the talking heads, a vast majority of people that are paying to be on these shows to talk about what they do and how they do it better. It's just investainment. It's exciting. It thrills. It's nothing short really of gambling. It gives you the sense that you're in control, the perception that you're in control, when the reality is there's nothing to control other than understanding the basics of investing, which is own equities across the country, diversify, and rebalance. Well, how are we doing internationally, Paul? Well, I'm glad you asked. Internationally is just as bad. Just as bad. In fact, when we look at the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index, that's developed markets, it's down year-to-date about 9%. When we look at emerging markets, wow, this one's killing us. It's a couple years now. Emerging markets continues to drop. And, you know, the smart thing is to continue rebalancing right into it. It is the laggard asset class in our market update, 17.82% negative. So international's taken a hit. They would say, when you watch the pundits and listen to the shows, that it's based on the devaluing of the yuan over in China. But speculators speculate, ladies and gentlemen. And when you're one that's constantly moving products based on a story, when that story changes, you better have a reasonable story to counter the previous story in which those transactions were based on. So this is an opportunity for a lot of very slick people that work at very slick outfits to create a very slick story. Next thing you know, you're on a pretty slippery slope and you're locking in losses in portfolios that should have just been left alone and rebalanced. There is any encouragement to buy, sell, or trade at any point that's not academically sought out and rigidly understood is nothing short of speculation in our opinion. Our being investor coaches around the country, those that believe education leads to clarity and clarity leads to confidence, and only with confidence can one have peace of mind. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not sure what you're doing in the market, find out. You spend way too much time and way too much effort trying to make a dollar, to earn a dollar, to have a comfortable and secure lifestyle and potentially a comfortable and secure retirement, to not spend a little time understanding. And if you don't know where to go, you can start at our website, faicoach.com, faicoach.com. We are fee-only fiduciary advisors. Check it out. There's information there for your perusal and education. There's a number of blogs that we do on a regular basis, etc. Enough self-promotion. Let me move on to a couple other items that I wanted to share with you. I picked these up, just news things that I picked up and I read, and I thought, wow, really, is that where we are right now? Interesting. This one grabbed my eye. There was an article that was out a few days ago, September 28th, that was published specifically, and it was talking about why only 34% of Americans have wills in place. We have private investor education events three times a year for all of our clients. And last year we brought in our accountant and our attorney just to talk about these items because we realized statistically how few people have really taken care of this. And it's something that's, I'll tell you, having clients that have passed, boy, if you get this stuff done on the front end, it makes it a whole lot easier for the heirs than them trying to piece it on the back end, because then you get the attorneys involved and other pieces of people that have opinions, and those opinions need to be pacified, generally speaking, which costs money. So, you know, doing a little work on the front end is pretty simple. Now, 69% in a recent poll I'm looking at, this is an Everplan's poll, said that 69% were very seriously considering drafting a will, but only 34% had actually done so. That's about what the stats that have been out there for many years. About one-third of the people have their legal documents in place. About two-thirds don't. Now, it's important more than ever that that be done, with the fact that we're living longer, the sheer amount of elder fraud that's taking place in our country. And, you know, when you have the fact that we're living longer, and generally parents and children are working together and trying to develop plans of care for their parents and grandparents, I think it's more important than ever to address these legal items. In fact, even fewer people are broaching the topic of elder care arrangements, which is one in four have a solid plan, which is really sad. I can tell you stories, many stories with clients, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all sudden demises, all kinds of different situations. And it turns out that the vast majority do not want to talk about this topic with their kids. They consider it a taboo topic, and only 18% of people in this poll have done so. So, wow, you know, it says here that the vast majority of people, 95% of the people, if they had access to where to start and how to proceed, would take care of it, but they're just not sure where to start. Well, it starts, ladies and gentlemen, by getting some education, whether that be through classes. We have Retirement Planning Today classes. We do spring and fall here locally. We also have a plethora of information on the website. If you're not sure where to start, pick up the phone. Pick up the phone and give us a call. If we don't know or can't help you, we'll direct you in the area that you need to get some legal work done. In fact, we have an attorney here in Pennsylvania that does that work for us, for all our clients, at a very palatable rate. So if you haven't get it done, get it done. Let me move on to something else. Millennials' viewpoint of paying for college. Now, this is interesting. Millennials would be basically, I guess, the 20-year-olds roughly at this point. And millennial parents, these are millennials that have had children, say that 74%, millennial parents aim to cover 74% of their children's college cost, quote unquote. Meaning that what we're finding in the research that is a lot of millennials are strapped with the huge amount of debt from college loans, that they're realizing that maybe they should start early and work hard at helping take care of this educational need for their children. When you look at the millennials, of 74% want to help their kids with college, compared to the Gen Xers, a previous generation, only 16% plan to help for college. It speaks to really just the sheer debt that millennials are taking on. Now, this caught my eye because when we often talk to parents, that is, we do retirement planning and income planning and the different things that we do for the 55 and above crowd into retirement, this college thing comes up often, and they say, you know, we have kids that have this college debt, and they're trying to get this college debt paid off as quick as they can. Is that the smart thing to do? Well, in most cases, it's not. It really isn't. It's actually counterproductive for most people. They don't understand. People don't understand the concept of debt, and that some debt's preferred debt, some's non-preferred debt. They don't understand the idea of opportunity growth. And if you're not growing, or you're giving up the opportunity to grow assets, that there's a cost for that as well. So one of the things that I would say as it relates to college, two things that stick in my mind. And this is based on hundreds of conversations with hundreds of folks in our planning, in our conference room, in our planning office. And this is also coming from, let me preface it, someone who lives in an academic community here where Penn State University resides, in State College. We are huge believers in education. Our firm is based on the concept of education leads to clarity, clarity leads to confidence, and only with confidence can one have peace of mind. But there's two things that I notice in hundreds of conversations. One is this feeling of it's a feeling that parents have that they must provide college for their kids, and whether they have the means or not, they feel compelled to do this. And I've said to some clients that we work with, look, if you decide to cover your kids' college, I understand that certainly is a personal decision, but plan on working another 5 to 10 years as a result. When you put it in that frame, some people say, well, whoa, wait a cotton picking minute here. I don't plan on working 10 more years so my son can go to college or my daughter can go to college. Well, we need to look at the math of it, because A plus B equals C. When you go to retire, A plus B equals C. You either have enough or you don't. And you got to look at that, because if you don't, then you have to work longer, obviously. So one factor we have to really look at is coupling the idea of paying for college with the need for retirement. And some people, if they don't get good planning help on that, and oftentimes they don't, they get an insurance salesman that wants to sell them an annuity and sells them a promissory story that they can't lose their money and get market returns, and that's not the whole truth. This is something that I commonly see. For those people that aren't getting real financial planning, what they end up finding out later on is, wow, I think I should have rethought this, or maybe put the kid on for a little more, or maybe had them get loans or whatever. So one thing I notice is that some people forego retirement from the obligation of needing to provide college for their children. The second thing that I notice is very common is how those people that have acquired college debt, how they go about paying it back. And it's one of the biggest areas that we see wealth transfers. There's four or five areas that we see wealth transfers that are unnecessary and unneeded. This happens to be one of them. With that being said, I've talked long enough. If you'd like to learn more about the college planning angle and different ways to pursue it, please give our office a call. As it relates to today, the market's down. It's a frustrating thing, but this too shall pass, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you that don't have or are not sure whether you got well-diversified portfolios that are globally based and are getting them rebalanced and so on, then I would strongly encourage you to check out our website, FAI Coach, or give our office a call, and perhaps one of our MRIs or our portfolio reviews might create clarity for you as it relates to where you are and what you're doing. If you're not sure, you should know. You spend way too much time and effort chasing money, not to manage it, when it just takes a little bit of education, and you don't need to know everything. Just a few right things. This is Paul Nichols, the president of Financial Abundance. I hope this finds you well. We'll talk to you next week or the week after with another market update, and hopefully things will have turned. Thank you for listening. And hey, if you know someone that would benefit, pass it on. Have a wonderful day.